If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at radiomd.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And this is Dr. Mike Roizen, one of my favorite people ever, because he's really full of life and just vibrant and wonderful and honest as heck, is the author of this next book. His name, Brian Wansink. Brian is, if you will, a PhD, but he and I don't hold that against him because he's done more good work than almost anybody else I know. He's a professor at Cornell University, the director of Cornell's famed food and brand lab. He really made it famed. He's a leading expert in eating behavior, the author of Mindless Eating, Why We Eat More Than We Think. He has done a ton of really great science that has led to the way we redesign, if you will, food eating areas for kids, the cafeterias. So, and I just tested, there's some test questions that you provide. Are you slim by design? And we just tested Bridget, and she got most of them right. although she did choose electrify the cookie jar as the way of...
Which I thought was a real option.
Doing the best choice. So one of the things here, you say there are menu words that make us fat. So why does buttery or creamed or crunchy make us fat, whereas seasoned or roasted help us to stay thin?
Well, it does so for two reasons. And the way we went about, the first reason is that it ends up sort of getting us to buy it in the first place instead of buying the thing that's in the steam. It just sounds a lot more evocative and enticing, but it also has a lot more calories because that's actually what it is, regardless of the type of food it is. So what we did is we took over, there's over 1,400 menu items and menus across the country, like, you know, Applebee's, Arby's, every place, and we looked at calorie levels. And one of the things we found is that if something says that it's crispy, regardless of whether it's a piece of fish or a piece of chicken or it's a piece of potato, on average it weighs about have about 104 calories more than something that doesn't say crispy. Something that says fried, about 135 calories. Something that says drenched, about 86 more calories, regardless of whether it's what's drenched in. And the key thing about this is the more enticing and evocative something sounds, you have to realize the more caloric it's going to sound. So if you take your best guess for calories and you double it, you're going to be closer to the actual calories in something that sounds enticing if you stick with your original estimate.
Wow, that's very interesting. Now, but you say one of the ways of getting kids to eat more vegetables is giving them intriguing names like passionate peas or powerful peas or something.
Yeah, you know, anything that makes something sound exciting and different, it doesn't matter how silly it is. We did this big study in a series of schools outside of Cleveland, and we let kids pick the alternative names for things. One was a bean burrito, which nobody ever took. It just sat there and got older and older each week. And we had people come up with names. They wanted to call it the Big Bad Bean Burrito. Well, there's nothing really big or bad about it, but simply giving it that cool name ended up leaving that bean burrito for the next eight times. It was the next eight weeks that it was sold to sell out. So what happens is that kids say, oh, this is going to be different. This sounds a little bit exciting. And not only does it get them to try it, it increases how much kids take by about 28%, but what it also ends up doing is it makes them think it tastes better than it actually does. When we give kids power peas versus just peas, granted they are the same peas, the kids rate them as more tasty and they rate them as more flavorful, and they rate them as feeling powerful actually after they eat them. Taste is tremendously subjective, and this is stuff we can use with our kids at home too. I mean, what we do with our kids at home is we never just say, here's some vegetables. Give the vegetables a description. We give them a little story behind it. And it makes it more of an adventure and more of a reason to try it.
What do you mean by a story behind it? There's actually a neat email question for you already. But go ahead. Let me ask you the question first. Sorry, I asked you the other one first, and I'm screwing it all up. But what the heck? The question Matt is asking is, what's the best thing you can do in a school cafeteria to get people to eat the healthier options they have right now?
The best thing you can do is to give that item a name. Let's say it's a vegetarian lasagna. You can make it up. The best thing you can do is to give it a name. Call it Tuscan vegetarian lasagna. The next best thing you can do is make sure it's first in line so that kids see it when they're hungry and they don't see it after they've picked up a piece of pizza and they've picked up a cinnamon roll and they've picked up a cookie. The next best thing you can do is actually put it on a little display board ahead of time so that when kids are walking to the lunchroom, they see it, they say, wow, Tuscan vegetable lasagna, that sounds kind of cool. Yeah, let me think about it. And the next best thing you can do is to pair it in some sort of a combo where one of the things in the combo does have an inherent attraction. It might be a small piece of cake or spumoni ice cream or something like that that comes as part of that lunchroom combo. There's a lot of small things you can do that change the likelihood somebody takes that vegetarian entree by about 20%. But once you start doing a bunch of other things, boy, you've almost engineered the fact that you're going to be running out of that in the first half of school lunch period.
And a lot of these things seem like they're stuff that fast food restaurants have been keen to for a while, like the Mighty Kids meals that they label and then the way that they do combo meals. Do you think that they knew this for a while and now we're seeing that the opposite is true for trying to encourage healthy food?
Oh, no, the exact same things that work for in McDonald's, I mean, also work in school lunchrooms. We find who benefits most by branded foods? Cookies? No, it's apples, it's carrots. People think branded, you know, like if you put an Elmo sticker on a cookie, it doesn't make any difference. They want to take it anyway. You put an Elmo sticker on an apple or on carrots, and it's gone in a second. One of the cool things I do, and I talk about this in Slim by Design, is one time I took five former managers, fast food managers of different fast food companies, I took them into school lunchrooms and I said, okay, what would you do here if you had less than $50 to get kids to eat healthier? And it didn't take them 3 minutes before walking into the cafeteria before they started firing off suggestions of what could be done for no cost or for low cost. The thing is that
when we come back, we're going to talk about what is different about homes, what you can do in your home, and then what we should be aware of when we go out, other than the names on the items. We'll be right back. This is a wonderful book. It is called Slim by Design by Brian Wansink. Oh, sorry. Well, it turns out that I'm a little early in that key. How much time do we have, Sonar? 60 seconds. Okay, so Brian, we can ask you a second question while we're in. What else should we be aware of when we go to a restaurant?
One of the things you want to be aware of when you go to a restaurant is where you sit might have a really big impact on what you decide to eat. We did a really neat study across a lot of restaurants in the United States where what we do is we look where people were at, we coded where they sat, we looked what they ordered. One thing we find people who sit in booths, dark booths in the back, are about 80% more likely to order fried food, they're less likely to get salad, they're more likely to get desserts. People who end up being near the windows buy more salads, people at high tables buy more fish and chicken. But what you want to do, you want to stay away from the dark corners, the loud areas, you want to stay away from the bar, because the people who sit there end up eating a whole lot more.
We'll be right back with Brian Wansink. I'll get the timing right. Slim by Design, Mindless Eating Solutions. WANSINK, a great book and a great set of data. We'll be right back.
Did you know the body's natural collagen production slows at a rate of 1.5% per year after age 25? Replenishing the body's collagen supply helps minimize fine lines and wrinkles and improves skin elasticity, builds and supports bone matrix, repairs connective tissues, improves circulation, and promotes wound healing. With the highest collagen dosage on the market, restore your youthful vitality with NeoCell, the number one collagen brand in the world and the leader in nutracosmetics. NeoCell.com.
When Dad needed help getting around, I became his driver. Any daughter would do the same. But soon enough, he needed help doing more things, and it was up to me to be his personal shopper and financial manager, too. And before I knew it, Dad moved in with me. So I became his cook, his personal assistant, his physical therapist, and even his nurse. When I started taking care of Dad, I didn't realize all the roles I'd have to play. But no matter what, I know I'm still his daughter.
We understand the many roles you play. And to help, we created an online caregiving resource center. At aarp.org/caregiving, you can find resources and connect with the caregiving community. Together, we can better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving to learn more. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And this is Dr. Mike, you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, the passionate show that shows you how you can take care and charge of your body. Brian Wansink, who is probably the best of all the people, all the guests you could possibly have on a radio show or a TV show. He looks good, so he would do that. But he is so good at answering questions, so good at posing questions that his research has answered, that you just want to keep talking to him and keep talking to him. One of the things you did is you have a restaurant scorecard, a restaurant self-assessment scorecard in the book. Tell us about that.
A question that a lot of us should probably be asking ourselves is, our favorite restaurants, when we go to most frequently, is it making us slim by design or is it making us fat by design? You know, is it setting things up so we naturally overeat, or is it actually doing things that actually lead us to actually make those a little smarter choice or eat a little bit less? And so we came up with a scorecard, and it's a research-based scorecard. It's based all on different evidence we found in different studies where you can just go through and answer 100 questions. You can actually do an abbreviated scorecard on the slimbydesign.org website. You answer these questions, and it shows you a restaurant gets a 30, it's probably making you fat by design. If it gets a 70, it's working for you. I mean, for example, if they offer a half-size portion, they get a point. Now, half-size portions are win-win for us and for the restaurant. Our research shows that people who order half-size portions end up report eating about 30% less total calories. They eat less entree, but they also, they still eat a little bit of, they order some extra things. But it also benefits the restaurant because the restaurant makes more money because they buy some extras. They come back and eat more frequently because they're not stuffed when they leave and things like this. If a restaurant promotes the use of a doggy bag before you order your food, you know, they get another point. And the nice thing about the scorecard is that when you go through and you check through it, you not only know what you do, but you actually know what to ask your favorite restaurant to do to help you eat better, but things that are actually in their best interest to do also. We actually also developed one for a 10-point checklist, scorecard for your favorite fast food restaurants, and it's easy. It's nice to see these things being tweeted and Facebooked around. People say, hey, my Arby's in Sioux City, Iowa is, got a 6 out of 10. It's helping make me a little more slim by design. Interesting, your earlier conversation I was listening to about fruit, I was at a Burger King on Interstate 90 just last week, and went into the Burger King and got a surprise. There were bananas, there were apples, there were oranges right by the cash register. And it was very encouraging to see that a fast food restaurant believed it could make more money by giving us options that are healthier.
Wow, that's different. One of the things that I did that Bridget also did is that CSPI reported on this week is that 90% of the food choices near the cash register, and maybe higher if you look at it, but at least 90% of the food choices by the checkout counter at supermarkets are unhealthy. And I was going to say, how do we get that done? And you've got some sample scripts in the back of the book.
Yeah, you know, actually, we've actually done a bunch of interventions in supermarkets in the island of Bornholm in Denmark. We've been in all these supermarkets, and we found that if you have at least one candy-free aisle, checkout aisle in a grocery store, the grocery store makes more money. Because what they do is they sell more CDs, more batteries, more greeting cards, more of whatever they decide to put in an aisle. Second, if they have another aisle that is healthy food only, they also make slightly more than if it was a candy aisle. So one of the interesting things we can do is we can simply ask our local grocery store to have a candy-free aisle. And it was kind of interesting. You know, I mean, they might say no, but you could also say, oh, great, I'll take the $8,000 I spent on groceries and go somewhere else. It was interesting. We here in Ithaca, we have a we have a grocery store that didn't have a candy-free aisle, and I asked them to do that, and they said, no, we can't because blah, 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 you know, slotting allowances, blah, blah, blah. I said, really, that's too bad because I'd shop here more often if you had one. And what I did is I had everybody in my lab go into that same grocery store and request there be a candy-free aisle, and by the time the fourth person did it, the candy-free aisle appeared.
Wow.
It's amazing. Well, just a few requests can do, because if they think they're going to lose somebody who's spending, on average, $5,000 in groceries, which is what most families spend, you know, they are motivated to make a change if they think they're going to lose you. It doesn't need a law. It just needs market power.
Now, I should tell you that we're working with one of the fast food restaurants which wants to be known for wellness and is gradually introducing healthy things, and will gradually be reducing unhealthy things. So someday I'll tell you about that. But it is interesting that they want to change. They think that the brand they should have is a wellness brand, even though they're a fast food restaurant.
Well, it's exactly like CVS and their recent announcement to stop selling cigarettes, even though they'll lose a lot of money probably initially. I think it's a good long-term investment. Don't you agree?
I do.
Yes, it was a great idea.
Now, Brian, you've done so many different things. I've got to tell you that one of them that always happens to affect my wife and I is wine glass size. I like red wine, she likes white wine, and although some people would say it's a good thing I get more wine every night because she just looks at the height. So you did this research where the height of the glass is one of the keys.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing if you look at most white wine glasses, they're a little bit taller and a little more narrow, and red wine glasses are a little more short and kind of stout and round about around the bottom. We found when people pour, they pour to the height of the glass, and if you do that, you're going to end up pouring on average about 18% more wine into a red wine glass than a white wine glass, because you just, you know, you pour at the bottom, fills up first, and you just keep pouring until it gets halfway, and by the time it gets there, over poured. So one thing you might want to do if you want to drink a little bit less without having to think about it is, regardless if you're drinking red wine or white wine, use that white wine glass. You'll think you're getting more, and you'll stop pouring earlier.
Well, I've got to tell my wife to use that white wine glass on me, if you will. So that's right. What is the most surprising thing you've seen in changing design at schools?
What's interesting about that question is that we have this 100-point scorecard. You can find it at swimbydesign.org. It's a 100-point scorecard, very easy, small changes, you know, put the fruit next to the cash register, name the fruit, whatever. We find that no matter how poorly people do it, you can't do it wrong. These changes are so robust, kids will take more fruit and more vegetables regardless of how poorly it's implemented.
Thanks, Brian Wansick. Slim by Design. I'll see you at New Year's, I hope. Slim by Design, mindless eating solutions for...
People ask, what's our secret? How are we successful 70 years after my grandmother started our tea company? Hi, I'm Cindy Bigelow, president of Bigelow Tea, and the answer is simple. We take years to perfect each tea recipe, then carefully put each tea bag in the perfect protective pouch, so none of our special flavors escape and no air and moisture comes in. If you're going to take the time to craft the perfect recipe, you need to protect it. So next time you have a cup of Bigelow Tea, do me a favor. Open the foil pouch, smell that aroma. That's our secret.
I'll never get used to these 10-mile runs. They are taking so much time out of my day.
Are you training for a marathon or something?
Diabetes runs in my family, and I heard if you lose lots of weight, you can prevent it. So I started running like crazy, and I cut my calories big time.
Oh, get real. You don't have to knock yourself out to prevent diabetes. My doctor said it's the small lifestyle changes you make that matter, because it's easier to stick to them.
Wow, really?
It worked for me. 6 months ago, I started walking a lot and I stopped eating the fried stuff. I've lost 10 pounds. My doctor said I'm doing great.
I'll have to ask my doctor about this. I'd love to get my life back.
Talk to your healthcare provider. Losing a small amount of weight by being active 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and eating healthier can prevent type 2 diabetes. To get your free game plan for preventing type 2 diabetes, call 1-800-438-5383. This is a message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the National Diabetes Education Program.